When Nikki was little, her mother made her go each autumn, when the butchering was being done, to help people make soap. Her mother said helping others built proper character. Nikki still had a few small dots of scars on the backs of her hands and forearms, where she had been splashed and blistered by the hot fat. Nikki's mother always made her wear a fine dress, not to impress the other people who didn't have such clothes, but to make Nikki conspicuous and uncomfortable. The attention her pink dress attracted was not admiration. As she stood with the long wooden paddle stirring the bubbling kettle while the lye was being poured in, some of the other children, trying to splash the dress and ruin it, burned Nikki, too. Nikki's mother had said the burns were the creator's punishment. As Nikki moved past, inspecting the assembled people, the only sounds were the horses off behind the buildings, the sporadic coughs of people, and the flags of flame in the fire pit snapping and flapping in the breeze. The soldiers had already helped themselves to the two pigs that had been roasting on the rod, so the aroma of cooking meat had mostly dissipated on the wind, leaving the sour smells of sweat and the stink of human habitation. Whether a belligerent army or a peaceful town, the filth of people smelled the same. "You all know why I'm here," Nikki announced. "Why have you people made me go to the trouble of such a journey?" She gazed down the line of maybe 200 people standing 4 and 5 deep. The soldiers who had ordered them out of their homes and in from the fields greatly outnumbered them. She stopped in front of a man she had noticed people glancing at. "Well?" The wind fluttered his thin gray hair across his balding, bowed head as he fixed his gaze on the ground at her feet. "We don't have anything to give, mistress. We're a poor community. We have nothing." "You are a liar. You had 2 pigs. You saw fit to have a gluttonous feast instead of helping those in need."
"But we have to eat."
It was not an argument so much as a plea. "So do others, but they are not so fortunate as you. They know only the ache of hunger in their bellies every night. What an ugly tragedy that every day thousands of children die from the simple want of food, and millions more know the gnawing pain of hunger, while people like you, in a land of plenty, offer nothing but selfish excuses. Having what they need to live is their right, and must be honored by those with the means to help. Our soldiers, too, need to eat. Do you think our struggle on the behalf of the people is easy? These men risk their lives daily so you may raise your children in a proper civilized society. How can you look these men in the eye? How can we even feed our troops if everyone doesn't help support the cause?" The trembling man remained mute. "What must I do to impress upon you people the seriousness of your obligation to the lives of others? Your contribution to those in need is a solemn moral duty, sharing in a greater good." Nikki's vision suddenly went white. With a pain like scorching hot needles driven into her ears, Jagang's voice filled her mind.
"Why must you play this game? Make examples of people. Teach them a lesson that I am not to be ignored."
Nikki swayed on her feet. She was completely blinded by the pain bursting inside her head. She let it wash through her, as if watching it happen to a stranger. Her abdominal muscles twitched and convulsed. A rusty barbed lance driven up through her, ripping her insides, could not have hurt more. Her arms hung limp at her sides while she waited for Jagang's displeasure to end, or for death. She was unable to tell how long the torture lasted. When he was doing it, she was never able to sense time. The pain was too all-consuming. She knew from what others told her when they saw it done to her, and from seeing it done to others, that it sometimes lasted only an instant. Sometimes it lasted hours. Making it last hours was a waste of Jagang's effort. She couldn't tell the difference. She had told him as much. Suddenly she was unable to draw a breath. It felt like a fist squeezed her heart to a stop. She thought her lungs might burst. Her knees were about to buckle.
"Do not disobey me again."
With a gasp, air filled her lungs. Chagang's discipline ended, as it always did, with an impossibly tart, sour taste on her tongue, like an unexpected mouthful of fresh raw lemon juice and pain searing the nerves at the back of her jaw under her earlobes. It left her head ringing, and her teeth throbbing. As she opened her eyes, she was surprised, as she always was, not to see herself standing in a pool of blood. She touched the corner of her mouth and then brushed her fingers to an ear. She found no blood. She wondered in passing why Jagang had been able to come into her mind now. Sometimes he couldn't. It didn't happen that way for any of the other sisters. He always had access to their minds. As her vision cleared, she saw people staring at her. They didn't know why she had paused. The young men, and a few of the older ones too, were sneaking peeks at her body. They were used to seeing women in drab, shapeless dresses, women whose bodies exhibited the toll taken by endless hard work and almost constant pregnancy from the time they were old enough for the seed to catch. They had never before seen a woman like Nikki, standing straight and tall, looking them in the eye, wearing a fine black dress that hugged a nearly flawless shape marred by neither hard work or the labor of birth. The stark black material contrasted the pale curve of cleavage revealed by the cut of the laced bodice. Nikki was numb to such stares. Occasionally they suited her purposes, but most of the time they didn't, and so she disregarded them. She began walking down the line of people again, ignoring Emperor Jagang's orders. She rarely complied with his orders. She was, for the most part, indifferent to his punishment. If anything, she welcomed it.
Nikki, forgive me. You know I don't mean to hurt you.
She ignored his voice, too, as she studied the eyes peering up at her. Not everyone did. She liked to look into the eyes of those courageous enough to risk a glimpse of her. Most were filled with simple terror. There would soon be abundant justification for such apprehension.
Nikki, you must do as I tell you, or you are only going to end up forcing me to do something terrible to you. Neither of us wants that. Someday I am going to end up doing something from which you will be unable to recover.
If that is what you wish to do, then do it, she thought in answer. It was not a challenge. She simply didn't care.
You know I don't want to do that, Nikki.
Without the pain, his voice was little more than a fly annoying her. She paid it no heed. She addressed the crowd. Do you people have any concept of the effort being put into the fight for your future? Or is it that you expect to benefit without contributing? Many of our brave men have given their lives fighting the oppressors of the people, fighting for our new beginning. We struggle so that all people will be able to share equally in the coming prosperity. You must help us in our effort on your behalf, just as helping those in need is the moral obligation of every person. So too is this.
Commander Cardiff, displaying a look of sour displeasure, planted himself in front of her. The sunlight slanting across his lined face cast his hooded eyes in deep shadows. She was not moved by his disfavor. He was never satisfied with anything. Well, she corrected herself, almost never.
People can only achieve virtue through obedience and sacrifice. Your contribution to the order is to implement their compliance. We are not here to hold civic lessons.
Commander Cardiff was confident in his privileged mastery over her. He too had given her pain. She endured what Kadar Cardiff did to her with the same detachment with which she endured what Jagang did to her. Only in the furthest depths of pain could she begin to feel anything. Even pain was preferable to the nothingness she usually felt. Kadar Cardiff was probably unaware of the punishment Jagang had just completed, or his orders. His Excellency didn't use Commander Cardiff's mind. It was an arduous undertaking for Jagang to control those who didn't possess the gift. He could do it, but it was rarely worth his effort. He had the gifted to control people for him. A dreamwalker somehow used the gift in those who possessed it in order to help complete the connection to their minds. In a way, the gifted made it possible for Jagang to so easily control them. Kadar Kardif glowered down at her as she gazed up at his darkly tanned and creased face. He was an imposing figure in his studded leather straps that crossed his massive chest, his armored leather shoulder and breastplates, his chainmail, his array of well-used weapons. Nikki had seen him crush men's throats in one of his big, powerful hands. As silent witness to his bravery in battle, he bore a number of scars. She had seen them all. Few officers ranked higher or were more trusted than Kadar Kardif. He had been with the Order since his youth, rising through the ranks to fight alongside Jagang as they expanded the empire of the Imperial Order out of their homeland of Altur-Rang to eventually subjugate the rest of the Old World. Kadar Kardif was the hero of the Little Gap campaign, the man who almost single-handedly turned the course of the battle, breaking through enemy lines and personally slaying the three great kings who had joined forces to trap and crush the Imperial Order before it could seize the imaginations of the millions of people living in a patchwork of kingdoms, fiefdoms, clans, city-states, and vast regions controlled by alliances of warlords. The Old World had been a tinderbox, waiting for the spark of revolution. The preachings of the Order were that spark. If the High Priests were the Order's soul, Jagang was its bone and muscle. Few people understood Jagang's genius. They saw only a dreamwalker, or a ferocious warrior. He was far more. It had taken Jagang decades to finally bring the rest of the Old World to heel, to put the Order on its final path to greater glory. During those years of struggle for the Order, while engaged in nearly constant war, Jagang toiled building the road system that allowed him to move men and supplies great distances with lightning speed. The more lands and peoples he annexed, the more laborers he put to the construction of yet more roads by which he could conquer yet more territory. He was thus able to maintain communications and to react to situations faster than anyone would have believed possible. Formerly isolated lands were suddenly connected to the rest of the Old World. Jagang had knitted them together with a net of roads. Along those roads, the people of the Old World had risen up to follow him as he forged the way for the Order. Kadar Kardif had been part of it all. More than once he had taken wounds to save Jagang's life. Jagang had once taken a bolt from a crossbow to save Kardif. If Jagang could be said to have a friend, Kadar Kardif was as close as any came to it. Nikki first met Kardif when he had come to the Palace of the Prophets in Tanamura to pray. Old King Gregory, who had ruled the land, including Tanamura, had disappeared without a trace. Kadar Kardif was a solemnly devout man. Before battle he prayed to the Creator for the blood of the enemy, and after, for the souls of the men he had killed. That day he was said to have prayed for the soul of King Gregory. The Imperial Order was suddenly the new rule in Tanamura. The people celebrated in the streets for days. Over the course of 3,000 years, the sisters, from their home at the Palace of the Prophets in Tanamura, had seen governments come and go. For the most part, the sisters, led by their prelate, considered matters of rule a petty foolishness best ignored. They believed in a higher calling. The sisters believed they would remain at the Palace of the Prophets, undisturbed in their work long after the Order had vanished into the dust of history. Revolutions had many times come and gone. This one, though, caught them up. Kadar Kardif had been nearly 20 years younger, then a handsome conqueror riding into the city. Many of the sisters were fascinated by the man. Nikki never was. But he was fascinated by her. Emperor Jagang, of course, did not send such invaluable men as Commander Kardif out to pacify conquered lands. He had entrusted Kardif with a much more important task, guarding his valuable property. Nikki turned her attention away from Kadar Kardif and back to the people. She settled her gaze on the man who had spoken before. We cannot allow anyone to shirk their responsibility to others and to our new beginning.
Please, mistress, we have nothing. Disregard of our cause is treasonous.
He thought better of disagreeing with that pronouncement.
You don't seem to understand that this man behind me wants you to see that the Imperial Order is resolute in their devotion to their cause if you don't do your duty. I know you have heard the stories, but this man wants you to experience the grim reality. Imagining it is never quite the same. Never quite as gruesome.
She stared at the man, waiting for his answer. He licked his weather-cracked lips.
We just need some more time. Our crops are doing well. When the harvest comes in, we could contribute our fair share toward the struggle for the new beginning.
Yes, mistress, he said, bobbing his head.
The new beginning.
When his gaze returned to the dirt at his feet, she moved on down the line. Her purpose was not really to collect, but to cow. The time had come. A girl gazing up at her snagged Nikki to a stop, distracting her from what she had intended. The girl's big dark eyes sparkled with innocent wonder. Everything was new to her, and she was eager to see it all. In her dark eyes shone that rare, fragile, most perishable of qualities, a guileless view of life that had yet to be touched by pain or loss or evil. Nikki cupped the girl's chin, staring into the depths of those thirsting eyes. One of Nikki's earliest memories was of her mother standing over her like this, holding her chin, looking down at her. Nikki's mother was gifted, too. She said that the gift was a curse and a test. It was a curse because it gave her abilities others didn't have, and it was a test to see if she would wrongly exert that superiority. Nikki's mother almost never used her gift. Servants handled the work. She spent most of her time nested among her clutch of friends, devoting herself to higher pursuits.
"Dear Creator, but Nikki's father is a monster," she would complain as she wrung her hands. Some of her friends would murmur their sympathy. "Why must he burden me so? I fear his eternal soul is beyond hope or prayer."
The other women would tisk in grim agreement. Her mother's eyes were the same dull brown as a cockroach's back. To Nikki's mind, they were set too close together. Her mouth, too, was narrow, as if fixed in place by her perpetual disapproval. While Nikki never really thought of her mother as homely, neither did she consider her beautiful, although her friends regularly reassured her that she most surely was. Nikki's mother said beauty was a curse to a caring woman, and a blessing only to whores. Puzzled by her mother's displeasure of her father, Nikki had finally asked what he had done.
"Nikki,"
her mother said, cupping Nikki's small chin that day. Nikki eagerly awaited her mother's words.
"You have beautiful eyes, but you do not yet see with them. All people are miserable wretches. That is the lot of man. Do you have any idea how it hurts those without all your advantages to see your beautiful face? That is all you bring to others. Insufferable pain. The Creator brought you into the world for no reason but to ease the misery of others, and here you bring only hurt."
Her mother's friend, sipping tea, nodded, whispering to one another their sorrowful but firm agreement. That was when Nikki had first learned that she bore the indelible stain of some shadowy, nameless, unconfessed evil. Nikki gazed into the rare face looking up at her. Today this girl's dark eyes would see things they could not yet imagine. Those big eyes eagerly watched without seeing. She could not possibly understand what was to come, or why. What kind of life could she have? It would be for the best this way. The time had come. Chapter 8. Before she could begin, Nikki saw something that ignited her indignation. She whirled to a nearby woman.
"Where is there a washtub?"
Surprised by the question, the woman pointed a trembling finger toward a two-story building not far off.
"There, mistress, in the yard behind the pottery shop are laundry tubs where we were washing clothes."
Nikki seized the woman by her throat.
Get me a pair of scissors. Bring them to me there.
The woman stared in wide-eyed fright. Nikki shoved her.
Now, or would you prefer to die on the spot?
Nikki yanked free a well-worn studded strap bunched with several others and secured over Commander Cardiff's shoulder. He made no effort to stop her, but as she gathered up the strap, he seized her upper arm in his powerful grip.
You had better be planning on drowning this little brat, or maybe cutting off hunks of her hide and then stabbing out her eyes.
His breath smelled of onion and ale. He smirked.
In fact, you start in on her, and while she's screaming and begging for her life, I'll begin separating out some young men, or perhaps I'll select some women to be an example. Which would you prefer this time?
Nikki turned her glare down at his fingers on her arm. He removed them as he growled a warning. She turned to the girl and whipped the strap twice around her neck to serve as a collar, twisting it into a handle in the back so she could control the girl with it. The girl squeaked in choked surprise. She had probably never been handled so roughly in her entire life. Nikki forced her ahead toward the building the woman had pointed out. Seeing how angry Nikki had suddenly become, no one followed. A woman not far off, undoubtedly the girl's mother, began to cry out in protest, but then fell silent as Cardiff's men turned their attention on her. By then Nikki already had the perplexed girl around the corner. Out back, drab laundry, deformed and crumpled from its ordeal on the washboard, and now stretched and pinned to lines, twisted in the wind, as if struggling to escape. Smoke from the fire pit peaked over the top of the building. The nervous woman waited with a large pair of shears. Nikki marched the girl up to a tub of water, drove her down on her knees, and then shoved her head under the water. While the girl struggled, Nikki snatched the scissors from the woman. Her chore completed, the woman held her apron up over her mouth to muffle her wails as she ran off in tears, not wanting to watch a child being murdered. Nikki pulled the girl's head up out of the water, and while she sputtered and gasped for air, began clipping her dark, soaking, wet hair close to the scalp. When Nikki had finished cutting it off in sodden clumps, she dunked the girl again while leaning over and scooping up a cake of pale yellow soap from the washboard on the ground beside the tub. Nikki hauled the girl's head up and then began scrubbing. The girl screeched, flailing her spindly arms and clawing at the strap around her neck by which Nikki controlled her. Nikki realized she was probably hurting her, but from within the grip of rage, it was only a dim realization.
"What's the matter with you?" Nikki shook the gasping girl. "Don't you know you're crawling with lice?"
But...
The soap was harsh and as rough as a rasp. The girl squealed as Nikki bent her over and put more muscle into the scouring.
"Do you like having a head full of lice?"
"No."
"Well, you must. Why else would you have them?"
"Please, I'll try to do better. I'll wash, I promise."
Nikki remembered how much she hated catching lice from the places her mother sent her. She remembered scrubbing herself, using the harshest soap she could find, only to be again sent off to another place where she would get infested with the hated things all over again. When Nikki had scrubbed and dunked a dozen times, she finally dragged the girl to a tub of clean water and swished her head about in it to rinse her off. The girl blinked furiously, trying to clear her eyes of the stinging soapy water as it streamed down off her face. Gripping the girl's chin, Nikki peered into her red eyes.
"No doubt your clothes are lousy with nits. You're to scrub your clothes every day, underthings especially, or the lice will just be right back."
Nikki squeezed the girl's cheeks until her eyes watered.
"You are better than to be filthy with lice. Don't you know that?"
The girl nodded as best as she could with Nikki's strong fingers holding her face. The big, dark, intelligent eyes, although red from the water and wide with shock, was still filled with that rare sense of wonder. As painful and frightening as the experience was, this had not dispelled it.
"Burn your bedding. Get new."
Given the way these people lived and worked, it seemed a hopeless challenge.
"Your whole family must burn their bedding. Wash all their clothes."
The girl nodded her oath. Task completed, Nikki marched the girl back toward the gathered crowd. Forcing her along by the studded strap used as a collar, Nikki was unexpectedly struck by a memory. It was a memory of the first time she had seen Richard. Nearly every sister at the Palace of the Prophets had been gathered in the great hall to see the new boy Sister Verna had brought in. Nikki lingered at the mahogany rail, twining around her finger a lace dangling from her bodice, only to pull the lace straight and then to twine it again, when the pair of thick walnut doors opened. The rumbling drone of conversation, sprinkled with bright laughter, trailed to an expectant hush as the group, led by Sister Phoebe, marched into the chamber, past the white columns topped by gold capitals, and in under the huge vaulted dome. The birth of gifted boys was rare, and a cause of expectant delight when they were discovered and finally brought to live at the palace. A grand banquet was planned for that evening. Most of the sisters, dressed in their finery, stood on the floor below, eager to meet the new boy. Nikki remained near the center of the lower balcony. She didn't care whether she met him or not. It came as something of a shock to see how Sister Verna had aged on her journey. Such journeys typically lasted at most a year. This one, beyond the Great Barrier to the New World, had taken nearly 20. Events beyond the barrier being uncertain, Verna had apparently been sent off on her mission too far in advance. Life at the Palace of the Prophets was as long as it was serene. No one at the Palace of the Prophets appeared to have aged at all in so trifling a span of time as 2 decades. But away from the spell that enveloped the palace, Verna had. Verna, probably close to 160 years old, had to be at least 20 years younger than Nikki. Yet she now looked twice Nikki's age. People outside the palace aged at the normal rate, of course. But to see it happen so rapidly to a sister. As the roaring applause thundered on in the huge room, many of the sisters wept over the momentous occasion. Nikki yawned. Sister Phoebe held up her hand until the room fell silent.
"Sisters?"
Phoebe's voice trembled.
"Please welcome Sister Verna home."
She finally had to raise a hand to again bring the clamor of applause to a halt. When the room had quieted, she said,
"And may I present our newest student, our newest child of the Creator, our newest charge?"
She turned and held an arm out in introduction, wiggling her fingers, urging the apparently timid boy forward as she went on.
"Please welcome Richard Cipher to the Palace of the Prophets."
Several of the women stepped back out of the way as he strode forward. Nikki's eyes widened, her back straightened. It was not a young boy. He was grown into a man. The crowd, despite their shock, clapped and cheered with the warmth of their welcome. Nikki didn't hear it. Her attention was riveted by those gray eyes of his. He was introduced to some of the nearby sisters. The novice assigned to him, Pasha, was brought before him and tried to speak to him. Richard brushed Pasha aside, a stag dismissing a vole, and stepped out alone into the center of the room. His whole bearing conveyed the same quality Nikki beheld in his eyes.
"I have something to say."
The vast chamber fell to an astonished hush. His gaze swept the room. Nikki's breath caught when for an instant their eyes met, as he probably met countless others. Her trembling fingers clutched the rail for support. Nikki swore at that moment to do whatever was necessary to be named as one of his teachers. His fingers tapped the Radahan around his neck.
"As long as you keep this collar on me, you are my captors, and I am your prisoner."
Murmurs hummed in the air. A Radahan was put around a boy's neck, not just to govern him, but to protect him as well. The boys were never thought of as prisoners, but wards who needed security, care, and training. Richard, though, did not see it that way.
"Since I have committed no aggression against you, that makes us enemies. We are at war."
Several older sisters teetered on their heels, nearly fainting. The faces of half the women in the room went red, the rest went white. Nikki could not have imagined such an attitude. His demeanor kept her from blinking, lest she overlook something. She drew slow breaths, lest she miss a word. Her pounding heart, though, was beyond her ability to control. Sister Verna has made a pledge to me that I will be taught to control the gift, and when I have learned what is required, I will be set free. For now, as long as you keep that pledge, we have a truce. But there are conditions.
Richard lifted a red leather rod hanging on a fine gold chain around his neck. At the time, Nikki hadn't known it to be the weapon of a Mord Sith.
I have been collared before. The person who put that collar on me brought me pain, to punish me, to teach me, to subdue me.
Nikki knew that such could be the only fate of one like him.
That is the sole purpose of a collar. You collar a beast, you collar your enemies. I made her much the same offer I am making you. I begged her to release me. She would not. I was forced to kill her. Not one of you could ever hope to be good enough to lick her boots. She did as she did because she was tortured and broken, made mad enough to use a collar to hurt people. She did it against her nature. You,
his gaze swept all the eyes watching him,
you do it because you think it is your right. You enslave in the name of your creator. I don't know your creator. The only one beyond this world who I know would do as you do is the Keeper.
The crowd gasped.
As far as I'm concerned, you may as well be the Keeper's disciples.
Little did he know that some of them were.
If you do as she and use this collar to bring me pain, the truce will be ended. You may think you hold the leash to this collar, but I promise you, if the truce ends, you will find that what you hold is a bolt of lightning.
The room was as silent as a tomb. He was alone, defiant, in the midst of hundreds of sorceresses who knew how to harness every nuance of the power with which they were born. He knew next to nothing of his ability, and was collared by a Radahan besides. In this, he may have been a stag, but a stag challenging a congregation of lions, hungry lions. Richard rolled up his left sleeve. He drew his sword.
A sword? In defiance of the prodigious power arrayed before him.
The distinctive ring of steel filled the silence as the blade was brought free. Nikki stood spellbound as he listed his conditions. He finally pointed back with the sword.
Sister Verna captured me. I have fought her every step of this journey. She has done everything short of killing me and draping my body over a horse to get me here. Though she, too, is my captor and enemy, I owe her certain debts. If anyone lays a finger to her because of me, I will kill that person, and the truce will be ended.
Nikki couldn't fathom such a strange sense of honor, but somehow she knew it fit what she saw in his eyes. The crowd gasped as Richard drew his sword across the inside of his arm. He turned it, wiping both sides in the blood, until it dripped from the tip. Nikki could plainly see, even if the others could not, much as she saw in his eyes a quality others did not see, that the sword united with and completed magic within him. His knuckles white around the hilt, he thrust the glistening crimson blade into the air.
I give you a blood oath, he cried out. Harm the Baka Banmana, harm Sister Verna, or harm me, and the truce will be ended. And I promise you we will have war. If we have war, I will lay waste to the palace of the prophets.
From the upper balcony where Richard couldn't see him, Jedediah's mocking voice drifted out over the crowd.
All by yourself?
Doubt me at your peril. I am a prisoner. I have nothing to live for. I am the flesh of prophecy. I am the bringer of death.
No answer came in the stupefied silence. Probably every woman in the room knew of the prophecy of the bringer of death, though none was certain of its intended meaning. The text of that prophecy, along with all the others, was kept in the vaults deep under the palace of the prophets. That Richard knew it, that he dared declare it aloud in such company, augured the worst possible interpretation. Every lioness in the room retracted her claws in caution. Richard drove his sword home into its scabbard as if to punctuate his threat.
Nikki knew that the profound importance of what she had seen in his eyes and in his presence would forever haunt her. She knew, too, that she must destroy him. Nikki had to surrender favors and commit to obligations she never imagined she would have willingly done, but in return she became one of Richard's 6 teachers. The burdens she had taken on in return for that privilege were all worth it when she sat alone with him, across a small table in his room, lightly holding his hands, if one could be said to lightly grasp lightning, endeavoring to teach him to touch his Han, the essence of life and spirit within the gifted. Try as he might, he felt nothing. That in itself was peculiar. The inkling of what she felt within him, though, was often enough to leave her unable to bring forth more than a few sparse words. She had casually questioned the others, and knew they were blind to it. Although Nikki could not comprehend what it was about his intellect that his eyes and his conduct revealed, she did know that it disturbed the numb safety of her indifference. She ached to grasp it before she had to destroy him, and at the same time ached to destroy him before she did. Whenever she became confident that she was beginning to unravel the mystery of his singular character, and thought she could predict what he would do in a given situation, he would confound her by doing something completely unexpected, if not impossible. Time and again he reduced to ashes what she had thought was the foundation of her understanding of him. She spent hours sitting alone in abysmal misery, because it seemed to be in plain sight, yet she couldn't define it. She knew only that it was some principle important beyond measure, and it remained beyond her grasp. Richard, never happy about his situation, became increasingly distant as time passed. Forlorn of hope, Nikki decided that the time had come. When she went to his room for what she meant to be his final lesson and his end, he surprised her by offering her a rare white rose. Worse, he offered it with a smile and no explanation. As he held it out, she was so petrified that she could only manage to say, "Why, thank you, Richard." The white roses were from only one kind of place. Dangerous, restricted areas no student should ever have been able to enter, that he apparently could, and that he would so boldly offer her the proof of his trespass startled her. She held the white rose carefully between a finger and a thumb, not knowing if he was warning her, by giving her a forbidden thing, that he was the bringer of death, and she was being marked, or if it was a gesture of simple, if strange, kindness. She erred on the side of caution. Once again, his nature had stayed her hand. The other sisters of the dark had plans of their own. Richard's gift, as far as Nikki was concerned, was probably the least remarkable and by far the least important thing about him. Yet Liliana, one of his other teachers, a woman of boundless greed and limited insight, thought to steal the innate ability of his Han for herself. It sparked a lethal confrontation, which Liliana lost. The 6 of them, their leader, Ulyssia, and Richard's 5 remaining teachers, having been discovered, escaped with their lives and little else, only to end up in Jagang's clutches. In the end, Nikki understood that quality in his eyes no better than the first moment she had seen it. It had all slipped through her fingers. The girl ran for her mother when Nikki released her grip on the studded strap around her neck. "Well?" Commander Cardiff shrieked. He planted his fists on his hips. "Are you through with your games? It's time these people learn the true meaning of ruthless." Nikki stared into the depths of his dark eyes. They were defiant, angry, and determined. Yet they were nothing at all like Richard's eyes. Nikki turned to the soldiers. She gestured, "You two, seize the commander." The men blinked dumbly. Commander Cardiff's face went red with rage. "That's it. You've finally gone too far." He wheeled to his men, a whole field of them, 2,000 of them. He pointed a thumb back over his shoulder at Nikki. "Grab this lunatic witch." Half a dozen men nearest to her drew weapons as they rushed her. Like all order field troops, they were big, strong, and quick. They were also experienced. Nikki thrust a fist out in the direction of the closest as he lifted his whip to lash out and entangle her. With the speed of thought, both additive magic and subtractive twined together in a lethal mix as she unleashed a focused bolt of power. It produced a burst of light so hot and so white that for an instant it made the sunlight seem dim and cold by comparison. The blast blew a melon-sized hole through the center of the soldier's chest. For an instant, before the internal pressure forced his organs to fill the sudden void, she could see men behind through the gaping hole in his chest. The after-image of the flare lingered in her mind's eye like lightning's arc. The acrid smell of scorched air stung her eyes. The clap of her power's thunder rumbled out across the surrounding green fields of wheat. Before the soldier hit the ground, Nikki unleashed her power on three more of the charging men, taking off one's entire shoulder, the wallop whirling him around like a ghastly fountain, the dangling limb flinging off into the crowd. A third man was cut almost in two. She felt the concussion of the following bolt deep in her chest, and amid a blinding flash, the fourth man's head came apart in a cloud of red mist and bony debris. Her warning gaze met the eyes of two men with knives gripped in white-knuckled fists. They halted. Many more took a step back as the four reports, to her so separate, yet so close atop one another, that they almost merged into one rippling blast, still echoed off the buildings. "Now," she said in a quiet, calm, composed voice, that by its very gentleness betrayed how deadly earnest was the threat. "If you men do not follow my orders and seize Commander Cardiff, I will seize him myself, but of course not until after I've killed every last one of you." The only sound was the moan of wind between the buildings. "Do as I say, or die. I will not wait." The big men, knowing her, made their decision in the instant they knew was all she would grant them, and leaped to seize the commander. He managed to draw his sword. Kadar Cardiff was no stranger to pitched battle. He screamed orders as he fought them off. More than one man fell dead in the melee. Others cried out as they took wounds. From behind, men finally caught the deadly sword arm. Additional men piled on the commander until they had him disarmed, down on the ground, and finally under control. "What do you think you're doing?" Kadar Cardiff roared at her as the men pulled him to his feet. Nikki closed the distance between them. The soldiers held his arms twisted behind his back. She stared into his wild eyes. "Why, Commander, I am merely following your orders."
"What are you talking about?"
She smiled without humor, just because she knew it would further madden him. One of the men glanced back over his shoulder.
"What do you want done with him?"
"Don't hurt him. I want him fully conscious. Strip him and bind him to the pole."
"Pole? What pole?"
"The pole that held the pigs you men ate." Nikki snapped her fingers and they began pulling off their commander's clothes. She watched without emotion as he was finally stripped. His gear and prized weapons became plunder, quickly disappearing into the hands of men he had commanded. They grunted with effort as they fought to bind the struggling, naked, hairy commander to the pole at his back. Nikki turned to the stunned crowd. "Commander Cardiff wishes you to know how ruthless we can be. I am going to carry out those orders and demonstrate it for you." She turned back to the soldiers. "Put him over the fire to roast like a pig." The soldiers bore the struggling, furious Kadar Cardiff, the hero of the Little Gap campaign, to the fire pit. They knew that Jagang watched them through her eyes. They had reason to be confident that the Emperor would stop her if he wished to. After all, he was the Dreamwalker, and they had seen him force her and the other sisters to submit to his wishes countless times, no matter how degrading those wishes were. They could not know that for some reason Jagang did not have access to her mind right then. The wooden ends of the pole clattered into the sockets in the stone supports to each side of the fire pit. The pole sprang up and down with the weight of its load. The weight finally settled, leaving Kadar Cardiff to hang face down. He had little choice but to watch the glowing coals beneath him. Even though the fire had burned down, it wasn't long before the heat of the wavering low flames began causing him distress. As people watched in silent dismay, The commander twisted as he shrieked orders, demanding that his men take him down, promising them punishment if they delayed. His diatribe trailed off as he began gasping for control of his growing dread. Watching the eyes of the townspeople, Nikki pointed behind her.
"This is how ruthless the Imperial Order is. They will slowly, painfully, burn to death a great commander, a war hero, a man known and revered far and wide, a man who has served them well, just to prove to you, the people of an insignificant little town, that they will not hesitate to kill anyone. Our goal is the good of all, and that goal is held more important than any mere man among us. This is the proof. Now, do you people, for any reason, still think that we would shrink from harming any or all of you if you don't contribute to the common good?"
Nearly everyone shook their heads as they all mumbled, "No, mistress." Behind her, Commander Cardiff writhed in pain. He again yelled at his men, commanding them to bring him down and to kill the crazy witch. None of the soldiers moved to comply with his orders. To look at them, they didn't even hear him. These men had no notion of compassion. There was only life and death. They chose life. That choice required his death. Nikki stood watching the eyes of the people as the minutes dragged on. The commander was up a good distance from the low flames, but there was an expansive bed of broiling hot coals. She knew that from time to time the gusty breeze diverted the fierce heat to give him a fleeting reprieve. It would only prolong his ordeal. The heat was inexorable. Still, it would take some time. She didn't ask for more firewood. She was in no hurry. People's noses wrinkled. Everyone could smell his body hair burning. No one dared speak. As the ordeal wore on, the skin across Cardiff's chest and stomach reddened, then darkened. It was a good 15 minutes before it finally began to crack and split open. He shrieked in pain nearly the entire time. The smell turned to a surprisingly pleasant aroma of cooking meat. In the end, he gave in to wailing for mercy. He called her name, begging her to bring it to an end, to either free him or finish him quickly. As she listened to him sob her name, she stroked the gold ring through her lower lip, his voice little more to her than the buzzing of a fly. The thin layer of fat that lay over his powerful muscles began melting. He grew hoarse. Fueled by the fat, flames flared up, scorching his face.
"Nikki!"
Cardiff knew his pleas for mercy were falling on indifferent ears. He betrayed his true feelings.
"You vicious bitch! You deserved everything I did to you!"
She casually confronted his wild gaze.
"Yes, I did. Give my regards to the Keeper, Kadar." "Tell him yourself! When Shigang finds out about this, he'll tear you limb from limb. You'll soon be in the underworld in the Keeper's hands."
His words were once more but a trifling drone. Sweat beaded on people's foreheads as the spectacle dragged on. They needed no spoken orders to know she expected them to remain and watch the whole thing. Their own imaginations, should they consider disobeying her unspoken orders, would dream up punishments she never could. Only the boys were fascinated by the remarkable exhibition. Knowing looks passed among them. Torture such as this was a treat to the minds of young immortals. Someday they might make good order troops, if they didn't grow up. Nikki met the glare of the girl. The hatred in those eyes was breathtaking. Even though the girl had been afraid of the dunking and scrubbing, her eyes at the time had shown the world was still a wondrous place and she was someone special. Now her eyes betrayed her lost innocence. The whole time Nikki stood tall, with her back straight and shoulders square, to take the full blow of the girl's bright new hatred, feeling the rare sensation of experiencing something. The girl had no idea that Commander Cardiff had taken her place in the flames. When the commander finally went silent, Nikki turned her eyes from the girl and spoke to the townspeople.
"The past is gone. You are part of the Imperial Order. If you people don't do the moral thing by contributing toward the well-being of your fellow citizens of the Order, I will return."
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 3.